The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
It is today that we mark 100 years since Irish was made compulsory in our schools. It was this day in 1924 that the Minister for Education, Owen McNeill, announced that the teaching of Irish was to be made compulsory in all schools, with a view to stopping the constant erosion that there had been in the use of Irish around the country. I'm joined by Hazel de Nortún, who is People Before Profit Councillor and founder of Café Glick in Ballyfermot, Sean O'Mwell-Kieron, who is a reporter for Live 95, and Dermot Ling, who is owner of Wild Irish Retreats. Sean, let me start with you. 100 years on, the debate has, I think, run now for nigh on 100 years that says, if you want a language to be a vibrant part of normal life, well, then it has to be free that people choose to use it. And that if you make it compulsory, you'll beat the joy out of it. And the other argument is, if you don't make it compulsory, everybody will ignore it totally. Where do you stand?
Probably in the latter camp, unfortunately. But I think there's ways we could probably make it a bit more fun and engaging in schools so that people wouldn't feel like it was being bet into them or they were even forced to do it, you know?
How?
Well, that's a great question. I think it would be a shame not to have Irish as a mandatory subject, purely because we would lose the language very, very quickly if we weren't keeping it taught to our kids, especially in schools. But for me, I would probably change the curriculum or the way it's examined. I don't get into the argument of it's how it's taught, because that's a big exaggeration and looking at every single teacher with one brush. But for the leave insert, I would say that Irish as a subject should be maybe two subjects. I'd have the compulsory subject where you have, you know, your oral and aural comprehension of the language, so your conversation, your listening, and maybe even written comprehension as your mandatory subjects. And if you want, have applied Gaeilge, do your poetry, your prose, your literature, things like that, the stuff that really gets leaving sort of students bogged down, and have that as an option. And I mean, if you want to go really mad, you can give them extra points for doing that.
Well, you talk about making it more fun in school. I suppose to some extent, Hazel, that's what you're doing with the cafe, is trying to make it part of normal life rather than homework and hardship.
This is it. And I went to a Gaelic school. I went to a Gaelic college as well. And the difficulty that we had is when I kind of got a bit of a shock when I left school, how difficult it is to maintain the Irish language, because if you don't, like any language, I presume it is, if you don't use it, you lose it. And it was only when I kind of got back in and campaigning for more resources in the Gaelic school. I couldn't get my own kids into a Gaelic school after attending myself. Ballyfermot, D10 and D12 are the only areas left in Dublin without access to a Gaelic school. So there's a piece around as well, when you do want to go out and speak Irish and you do want it in schools, there's no services available. But moving on to the cafe piece, I suppose it was kind of, how do you use it after doing all of, excuse me, the Irish language for so long? And in particular, like, how do you make it fun? How do you incorporate it? But how do you make people feel confident in the space to use it? Because one of the first things that we came across when we first opened Café Glick, where people were ringing saying, I don't have Irish, can I still come down? So there's always that fear and the nervousness around it. And when they did come down, they were like, you know, surprised of the Irish words that they did have. And I suppose that comes back to the compulsory piece, where you don't maybe realise what you have stored in your intin, as we'd say, as Gaeilge, about the different words that you have.
Does it work, though? Because it's one thing to have, even if you're shining it back up, it's one thing to have enough language to get through small talk in ordering a coffee. Mm-hmm. But that's not the same as actual real fluency. Yeah. And does it get you to real fluency?
I suppose it would depend on the individual. And that's the thing, like, it's a conversational language. I would think it's easier to be spoken and to listen to it. If you go back through the educational system and you look at it as a written language, or follow the rules for writing, or the Mo Cineál, like people can start, it is difficult. Even though I was speaking it every day, we were like, it was only true by ear that I could understand the grammar, because I was used to saying it. So,
well, this is as it is for English. If you ask most people to get into the present participle, and very few people can give you the definition of how they use their own language.
Yeah, and this is the thing, I suppose, if we had more resources to use it. But I do think, rather than jumping to the point of removing the access to it, it's very difficult. As I said, there's not enough Irish language services out there anyway, and it's always a struggle. It's always a big campaign to get any of it. So that there's two systems kind of going on at the minute. There's the compulsory piece, but then there's the not making it accessible. It's just doing it for the sake of doing it, you know, and that's the bit that we kind of need to bridge the gap on.
Dermot Ling, can I ask you, this is Dermot Ling, who's owner of Wild Irish Retreats. Can I ask you this sort of heretical question, which is, as far as I've been able to read up on, it's very difficult to find a language that was being superseded in a country where, like Irish has with English, where it has been taken over by another language as the lingua franca of the country. Very difficult to find where people have been able to save the language that has been crushed. Is Irish a lost cause?
Is Irish a lost cause? I don't know if there's a benefit maybe in accepting the possibility of that. Maybe that might change the dynamic of people who are trying to save it under those under that guise, as though like we have to save this language. And maybe in accepting that it's a lost cause, I've heard this advanced down in Kirkcaldy in West Kerry by some of the great protectors of the language to say, yeah, okay, we surrender. We're just going to, okay, let's accept that it's a dying language. Just in the hope, I think, that we might change our attitude towards and the point of that, as opposed to trying to argue against its death. It's like, okay, let's accept that that's where we are. And now we're going to change tack, because obviously, you know, it's quite clear that we need to. At the same time, when I see the changes, like the likes of the cafe or on the retreats that we have, like people are coming to it with a huge amount of positivity and curiosity in a way that I don't think that they were. And it's definitely in just a spoken experience of, in our example, we'd say hurling matches through Irish, we collect seaweed, we'd cook food, just do everything through Irish. And so it's not a big deal. You're just learning new words all the time anyway. And whether you want to resist that or not, I mean, the ones who are going towards it are going towards it, and they're going towards it for a reason. And I think that they want to recolonize, in a sense, their own mind, that English functions a very particular way. It's very certain of itself. It's a very good language to organize. There's a great beauty to it as well. But we have something very unique in our own language, and I love that side of it that's not so certain of itself. It allows for that spaciousness that's in the Irish psyche of just wondering about what things are, not necessarily deciding what they are, but being clear on what they aren't. And that's throughout the language, this very creative and poetic way of looking at things. And I think that's probably something that we need at the moment, because the other way of certainty is kind of, sometimes I think there's a hopelessness to it in how we look at the world around us. The fact that it's such a nature-based language at this point in time, I think, is really beneficial for us. It's a great possibility, you know.
When you take people on Wild Irish retreats, I assume you have people who are coming because they want to re-engage with the language as well as with nature. But the vast majority of them, if they're Irish, will have come through a minimum of 12 years of Irish education. Do you despair at the quality that arrives in front of you?
I don't, for the simple reason that's the basis. I mean, Anton, that's why I'm in the position that I'm in. That's why you've called me today, is that I grew up for 22 years with no Irish whatsoever, like very poor. And I got into teaching and was on the edge of not passing the exams. And when I went down to West Kerry, I just made the Wexford hurling team at the time. I wasn't drinking. I found myself outside the group that were kind of there. And a couple of us decided, well, sure, maybe we just actually try and speak the language in everything that we do. After 3 days, I had a dream in Irish. And the following morning, the tension and the fear and the shame were gone. And the Mokanilic was still a mystery to me. That didn't change. But the feeling towards the language completely changed. And ever since then, I've been, I'm the learner. It's not like the teachers did this to me or the system did this to me or whatever. It's like, no, I'm curious about it since that switched in me. So if that took 3 days, and I'm not a linguist, that took 3 days in me for that orientation shift, for some light switch to turn on. And I mean, the joy in my life since that has happened, I couldn't quantify it. So I think that there's great that we're sitting on, and that's the benefit of it being compulsory, I suppose, even though I would be against compulsory probably most things, is that it has given us a basis from which we can build on if we can just let go of the excuse, in a sense. And it is an excuse. I go, this is what happened to me in the Leaving Cert. It's like, that was 20 years ago. Maybe it's time to move on. That's what happened. Okay, big deal. But there is a great base that people have, that once they re-engage for a couple of days, they find starting to come back. The confidence builds and a lightness comes with it. And I think that's what we're aiming for.
Texas say, the problem is that many, many of the teachers leaving training colleges all over the country themselves have a woeful standard of Irish. So how can they possibly teach it and pass it on with a positive attitude? Another, as a primary teacher of over 20 years, I can tell you that this approach certainly is not working. There is an overemphasis on grammar, and we are all sucking the joy out of the language. My grandson goes to a Gaelscoil. He has just finished junior infants, and he has a higher standard of Irish than most of my fifth class students. It should be conversational Irish as a focus. Grammar will come later naturally, like it does when children learn to speak English at home. But Sean, going back to you on that one, that's, the, I suppose, a big challenge for the system, because the educational system is geared up towards ultimately arriving at a point where you can objectively and systematically measure the quality that students are at. That means exams, that means grammar, and that means not teaching things in a nice, organic, conversational way.
Well, it doesn't. It doesn't. But I mean, don't forget that the Irish Oral is still a huge part of the Leaving Cert examination. It's what, 40% of it. Like, and yeah, absolutely, your grammar has to be correct, and you have to be fluent in your speaking. But you learn that through practicing, in that you're getting your conversational standards up to that level through talking. And I think it's actually a perfect example of how it can work. Same with the listening comprehension. You know, when you're listening to the language, actively engage and listen to different dialects and stuff, you pick up more, you might notice you're kind of not on the kind of your kind of your phrases or your bits of grammar and stuff like that. So, like, there's a broader way you can look at it rather than sitting down, staring at a page and trying to learn off. You know, like the guys are saying there, a Moch Ní Luach that scares absolutely everybody, and all these other grammar like pieces that. There's other ways of looking at it other than just rote learning, which is another problem that I'd have with the Leaving Cert. Like, is it an exam or is it a memory test, you know?
Now, can I ask you and everybody else whether or not we're codding ourselves to some extent? Because I was just looking at the numbers in the census in relation to Irish speaking. And according to the 1851 census, we had 1.4 million Irish speakers in the country. So just after the famine, we've 1.4 million Irish speakers. According to the 2022 census, which is only 2 years gone, we now have 1.8 million Irish speakers. Now, even given for the overall increase in population, do you believe that, Kieran, or rather Sean, that we have an increase of, what, a couple of 100,000 Irish speakers from 1850 to now?
Well, I'm no statistician, but I think
do you get the sense when you're wandering about that there's that many native Irish speakers in your vicinity?
Well, it's hard to say. I'm living here in Limerick City, and you know it wouldn't be known for our strong Gaelic connections. That being said, I was having coffee with a friend of mine outside a cafe in town 2 weekends ago, and like we always speak as Gaelic, me and my friend Aisling, and as the woman at the table, two tables down from us, was leaving, she came over, and we were kind of wondering why she was having around us, and she said, isn't it lovely to hear Irish spoken in Limerick City? And it's the first time either of us had ever experienced that. So they're out there, absolutely.
I think that's notable by its rarity. Let me ask you the same question. Sean was surprised by virtue of the fact that somebody said anything to him in Irish out of his bed. If there's 1.6 million of them knocking around, how many people are walking into your cafe, new arrivals with good Irish?
I suppose it's not that there's going to be the case of where if you went down and you were growing up and the Gael talks and Irish was your first language, there is differences. But with the statistics that you did list there, most of them are outside the Gael talks area of the Irish language speakers. But I think that's the concentration around Dublin. But also, though, if you're looking at the other statistics, 23% of parents have said if they had the availability of a Gael school, they would send their kids there. So there is a two end of it again, that people do want to send them in if they have the ability.
Do you attribute that to the language, though? Because there's a lot of stuff wrapped up in sending kids to Gael School. There is an assumption about the quality of education that comes with this. There's an assumption of things to do with the ideology that I like to go. So is it purely a language choice to send your kid to a Gael School?
I have heard that that conversation before, and three of my kids will be going through Gael School. And I did open up a Nienra before I opened up a creche because of the campaign of opening up a Gael School. And I can tell you that the mix that came in, they just wanted the opportunity and the aspiration for the child to learn the Irish language. But again, that fell off because of the fact that there was no Gael School to go in again. So if the ability or if the services are there, people will engage in it, and that then will give you the Blas Gael, but you have to be able to get in there to immerse yourself completely in it. So when you're asking me if people are coming in with that full level, they don't have the ability to immerse themselves in it. So it is a broken level of Irish, but they do want to do more.
While I'm asking questions that are heresy, answer me this. I can understand people setting up cafes like yours where you're feeding a demand, where there are people who want to freshen up their Irish, or like Dermot doing the wild retreats where people want to go and refresh something that's innate within them. That's a sort of a pull factor. On the push factor thing, on the compulsory forcing it on students, what's the point?
I think it's too much of a steep step at the moment to jump to that to do it. I think there should be more conversations. Like, the department at the moment has released a report that they're asking people to feed into, like a survey, to see what do you want to see within the Irish plan.
But what are we trying to see in education? By making everybody do Irish?
I think we're trying to do what we're talking about here today. What way will people learn? What do they need? What's the gaps? What is holding people back from with their bad experience through Irish through the years? Like, what is the negative connotation with it?
We're never going to get to a situation where Irish is going to push English out of the way. We're never going to get to a situation, I don't think anyway, that we're going to have Irish re-becoming a vibrant. Does there come a point where you say, like Latin or like Greek, there will be enough who study it and enough who speak it that we'll always know how it works? But like a lot of our valuable stuff, let's keep it in a museum.
Well, I wouldn't agree with that aspect of it. I think it's a bit too far of a reach at the moment. But I do think there is reasons of having a second language. And some people in this country have three or four languages. And it does have the ability, they do say, if you do have a second language and you are fluent in it, it gives you ability to move on to learn more languages. So I think there's more positives, especially if you're looking at children immersing into education, to have it, to not have it. And I do think it goes back to, again, is we can look at different ways to learn it, different ways to grade it, all the different aspects before we look at removing the compulsory aspect of it. I have a lot of young women, especially in my constituency as well, who really supported me getting a vote in the local elections because they said of the Irish language stuff that I'm doing as well. So there is a re-emergence of young people as well. And I think it's just about capturing that and how we engage with it and how we incorporate it into all of our plans.
Text to say, Anton, census didn't say 1.8 million are native speakers, just speakers. No, that's what I was saying, that it is people who declared themselves able to speak well. Also, stop going on about fluency. I'd rather the couple of fuckle and a strong understanding than focusing on fluency. Cigarette paper between strong understanding and fluency. Agree with Sean, oral Irish the way to go. That should stay compulsory. Never mind poetry, etc. Same with English. Forget Shakespeare. Who needs Shakespeare? Dermot, your view on the big existential question. At some point, do we keep it in the museum?
No, I mean, in direct relation to the texter as well. I mean, it opens up the perfect, a more subtle point, I think, to make on it. I think absolutely we should be keeping and seeking to keep English, and we should be grateful for it. The great functionality of it in organising our society, and we've benefited greatly on the world stage because of it. But more so, maybe if we were to think of our creativity, if we were to think of our creative output, our poetry and our writing, our way of thinking, our way of seeing the world, I think that that's somewhere where we can allow the Irish language to recolonize our mindset. And I think that that's only going to bring a richness. You see more and more musicians, you see more and more poets going towards seeing what they would produce if they saw the world through an Irish. Like, it's not just the way of incorporating or understanding English and you just translate something directly. It's a different way of seeing the world. And there is a curiosity that people have, I think, that if they were to see the world differently, what way would they interact with it? And that's the great possibility of Irish. And that's the primary reason I see people coming towards our retreats, is that they're looking for that recolonization of their mind more so than of the words that they're speaking. And there's great possibility in it.
Let me ask you one thing about your retreats. What nature of Irish do you speak on your retreats?
What nature of Irish? I don't understand the context of the question. Sorry.
The reason I ask, I got a text to say, a big problem with Irish is how it's spoken. When the BBC started, the UK invented RP, received pronunciation, as a way that everyone could clearly understand, even with a poor quality signal. In Irish, we have the Caidéon Oifigeul, which serves the same purpose but is never used. Instead, we have the concept of a lovely bloss, which is basically Connemara Irish. This is closer to Russian than what I learned in school in Dublin. Instead, this was just a way for native speakers to look down their nose at the rest of us. My kids are in a Gael school in Dublin but can barely understand a word said on Radio na Gaeltachta. Like everything else in Ireland, people hijack something good and use it as a way to look down their nose at everyone else. So which Irish do you level, use?
I understand the context of the question a lot better now, Anton. Thanks very much. I would have, I suppose, a Munster Irish. I spent 7 years down in Corcaigh in the end, and I think it was probably the closest Irish that I would have had, probably somewhere between the Caidéon Oifigeul and Munster Irish. I would say, you know, I know that there's a lovely clash. I'm not sure if you're aware, but there's a lovely clash between Connemara Irish and Munster Irish in the fact that, as I see it, Connemara Irish is really embraces the English or anglicised words and putting them into the language. And they believe that the language should move and progress through as we embrace English more, like
in its totality. Whereas in Munster, there's a little bit more of like, no, we need to stay true to the tradition. And it's not that one is right and one is wrong. It's that there's a lovely clash there. And that clash brings about an energy on both sides. And that adds ultimately to the language. I'm sure maybe there are people who use it, maybe in that way. When I went down to West Kerry, my Irish was very poor. And all I got from everybody down there was encouragement and openness and a delight, actually, that you are willing to embrace the language and the aspects of the culture that go along with the language. So I just don't see it. I understand from the outside why you might say it and feel that. But from within it, when you're actually making the effort at speaking it. And that's what this is ultimately about. When we're talking about this in English, Anton, if we're going to have this conversation, it really needs to be had in Irish, I think, and it'll go a different direction.
Well, I wish you the best of luck and I will spectate as it goes on. Thank you all very much for coming on. Hazel the Northoon, People Before Profit Councillor and founder of the Cafe Glick in Ballyfermot. Sean O'Mahiron, reporter for Live 95, and Diarmaid Ling, owner of Wild Irish Retreats.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.